Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to our runners-up edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Fooey on the day job for delaying the recording, and, well, fooey on the dogs for wrecking the content. But here we are in what Dave Matthews might call the space between, discussing what could have been without disrespecting the opponent, celebrating the realities of this game without compromising the goal, discussing a season's end that so quickly has given way to player movement and forecast for 2022. I think so much of what this game represented was revealed in the minute after it ended. Saban and Kirby Smart meeting at midfield. Kirby asked about J-Mo's injury, and Saban, probably with too much of a grin, explained that Georgia kicked our ass in the fourth quarter. A moment of heart and honesty shared between longtime friends. I can't promise I'll maintain a similar grace over the next 30 minutes or so. So let's establish a couple of truths before we jump in. Okay, congratulations to Georgia and their fans. Of course, I'd rather we have won, but in doses, I can appreciate the joy of others. I did reach out to Herschel, who we interviewed before the first Georgia game, and just the excitement that he sent back in his response message. I felt good for him. I felt good for their fan base. I felt good for him. Of course, that will wear off living here in Atlanta and around all the Georgia fans and such. But in that moment, I celebrated the joy that he experienced. We've experienced it so many times. It is a unique joy. And to get to see another fan base experience it, rather it be us, but understand and congratulations to the dogs. On the whole 60 minutes, Georgia was the better team. I can cop to that. For stretches, Alabama was the better team. That too is true. Alabama held a 5-point lead almost 50 minutes into the contest. Either team legitimately could have won the game, which is a truth rare for championship games under the Saban era. In a Shakespearean twist, this game, this conclusion to this season for this team was about perfect. Alabama was a flawed team all season, not expected even by Alabama fans to even make the playoffs. But in the end, may have won the whole damn thing if healthy, or ironically, without so many drop passes. Georgia, as the preseason favorite, was dominant throughout the season, almost leading the way wire to wire. Criticized for a weak schedule, the Bulldogs beat back Alabama and their own demons to avenge the loss to Alabama in the SEC championship game. So against this backdrop, against these truths, let's do what we do. In our slice of the fandom, we provide a sort of guided tour through the season as it unfolds. Let's complete the job and get everyone back to their download machines safely. Offense, you're up. All right, so here we go. Bryce Young again logged a championship caliber effort, caliber performance. His stats may not 100% reflect it, but if you go back and you look at the game, if you go back and you look at the tape, Bryce Young was not the reason Alabama lost the game. Bryce netted out 35 of 57 for 61% passing, but there were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 dropped passes by the wide receivers. Bryce Young put up 369 yards passing of the total 399 yards that Alabama had. Bryce did have 43 yards negative rushing. These were sacks. Some of the sacks he scrambled and added on yards, and some of the sacks were just the linemen giving up pressure. Bryce had one touchdown against two interceptions, but at the end of the game, everyone knew that he was passing and he was putting the ball up. Bryce essentially lacked help. He lacked the help necessary to secure the win. The offensive line yielded pressure multiple times, and we've talked about receivers dropping well-placed balls. Check out, there's a Mississippi State guy, Matt Wyatt. He did about a 10-minute breakdown, basically explaining Bryce Young's not the reason Alabama lost the national championship game to Georgia. Go check that out. I'm going to link it in the show notes. It's a real informed breakdown, breaking down footage, receivers running the routes, ball placement, where the ball is perfectly placed, under duress, knowing that he's going to get popped in the chin, and he unleashes a ball that's right in the hands and is fumbled, or right in the hands in the completion not completed. Wyatt is fair. He says, look, this is the lineman. This is a drop. This is something else. He talks about some of the balls being legitimate 50-50 balls and the receiver needing to make the play in those situations. He's fair to both Georgia and Alabama. He says, hey, look, this may have been a push-off, but the receiver's still got to catch this ball. He says, on this play, this might have been pass interference, but the receiver still has to make the play on the ball. You can't count on the officials to bail you out. You've got to go check that out. Like I said, I'll link it in the show notes, Alabama Football Podcast at .com. And you'll find a link there. Watching that footage and sort of breaking that down and sort of thinking that through, a couple of things really popped for me. One of the dropped passes was in the end zone. One or two, had they been caught, they would have run into the end zone for touchdowns. One or two would have set up a score, even if just a field goal, but they would have set up a score. And all of the examples were across the 50. So it was Alabama moving the ball. These were drives stalling out for no points or stalling out for field goals instead of touchdowns. All across the 50, many inside the 30, many inside the 20, some inside the 10. It's really, really compelling. You never would expect to hit all of those passes. That's not realistic. It's a blowout if that happens. It's a blowout the other way. But that's not what we're saying here. We're not predicting that. We're not saying, but a couple of catches, and go back and watch the video. They're imminently catchable. This is not on Bryce. That's the point I'm making. One or two or three of those catches, and I do think it's potentially a different outcome. That's how close Alabama was to winning this game. But again, we talked about sort of the Shakespearean element. How fitting is this team that struggled with blocking, pass protection, and drops all season, loses the national title game for a couple of quarterback pressures and a couple of dropped passes? This is who we thought that we were, right? This is a sort of a Coach Dennis, right? We are who we thought we were, a flawed team and suspect, you know, to the end. And we saw it sort of, as Alabama fans, we saw it bring our team down. Brian Robinson was heroic, even if his numbers weren't spectacular. He had 22 carries for 68 yards. That's only a 3.1 yard average. He did have a long of 16. I thought at times we were running Brian Robinson to keep the defense honest, but there were a couple of situations, and I hate to go back and sort of pick on the OC or pick on play calling. Georgia's a very stout front. And so very few teams had success running just headlong into them. But there were a couple of possessions where I wish Alabama just would have said, look, we're pulling a pin on this and we're going to run the ball. Sort of results be damned. We're going to line up and see if we can't blow them off the ball. There was a first and goal from the 8. This was after the Cameron Latu catch and run on first and 8. And it would have been second and six because Alabama did run on first down. That drive stalled out after some incomplete passes and netted a field goal. There was another possession after an Ajayi Hall catch where Alabama set up shop at the 5. So first and goal from a 5. That was at the end of a 10-play drive early in the fourth quarter. That drive also ended in a field goal. I think you got to take one of those, and maybe it's first and goal at the 5, right? You've got to take that situation, and even if you have to say it and then turn around and not watch it play out, but you have to say, this is 4-down territory. We need more than a field goal, and we're going to run the ball. Unless we lose a lot of yards, we're not going to be – you know, crazy about this, but if we keep plugging and keep plugging and keep plugging, we think in four tries, we're going to get 5 yards. We think we can get this into the end zone. And I'm going to say this is four down territory. We're running the ball here unless we lose yards. And I'm going to go sit down and put my hand in my hand and just let the crowd tell me what happens. I think that's what Alabama should have done there. And look, I'm not saying that we should have just plowed Brian Robinson between the guard and the tackle or the guard and center four times. I think you can be multiple even in running the ball. You can do a naked boot. You can do a toss sweep. You can do a fullback dive. You can just plow it in the line. You can bring in a defensive lineman as a fullback and sort of do some sort of misdirection. You can be multiple in the context or in the confines of the run game. And when you're setting up shop there, first and goal at the five, I think you've got to take your shot. I think you've got to plow the ball. And if you don't get it, if you're not successful, then you trust your defense. That can come back and bite you in the rear end just as well as passing can. But this Alabama team, this personality, what I've seen so far this season, I'd like the odds. I'd like the opportunity to do that in that situation. And unfortunately, coaches called different plays, especially with all the drops, continuing to pass the ball in that situation. It's a short, confined field. All the things that we know, all the things that we talk about. I want to talk about Jamison Williams. He was J-Mo all the way to the end. He had four catches, 65 yards. Obviously, we know his long play for 40 yards. And I want to talk about that. That was first and 10 at the Alabama 25. That was the first play from scrimmage following Georgia tie in the game, 3-3. We know that J-Mo's a difference maker, and so we pulled the trigger hoping for a quick score, hoping that he would take it all the way in, and he may have had there not been an injury. But the fact that we knew we had that bullet in the chamber, we knew that we had a weapon that we don't think Georgia could have consistently defended. We have evidence of that being true. To pull that play out in that moment, hoping for a touchdown, certainly hoping to sort of tilt things in Alabama's favor, using this weapon that we know causes fear for our opponents. Go back to the last three or four games of the season against Auburn when he went out for the penalty, leading with his helmet. You could hear, even across the TV, you could hear the Auburn fans cheer. They knew that's a weapon they couldn't defend that was now out of the game. We heard the sideline reporter when Alabama played Cincinnati that when he was out for injury, that should have been potentially called for targeting as well, but it doesn't matter. He never should have run the ball out. But when he did, and he was taken out of the game, the defenders for Cincinnati were up and down the field, running up and down the sideline. He's out. He's out. He's out. They knew who they feared. It was Jamison Williams. And similarly, against Georgia, we saw what he did against Georgia in the SEC championship game. It was a player they could not consistently defend. And when he went out, again, we heard the sideline reporter saying, he's out. He's out, repeating the players on the Georgia team. They knew who they feared. They knew who singularly could beat them, and it was Jamison Williams. And I hate that he went down with injury, not for the impact to the game. Of course, I hate that as well, but just for the health of the individual. I hope that he makes a full recovery, and that I hope it doesn't impact his draft stock. We know that it will, but I hope that it doesn't impact his career down the road. He was such a treat for Alabama fans to see and enjoy. His contribution to the team, his contribution to this season goes very, very different. This might be a four-loss team without Jamison Williams. It's certainly not a team, I don't think, that gets to compete for the SEC championship, much less for the national title game. That is the level of contribution that J-Mo made. There's other players that made significant contribution as well, but I cannot understate the impact that Jamison Williams made. And as Alabama fans, he's sort of a one-hit wonder, a one season that we get to see him. But it's a player that we need to remember and celebrate as we roll forward. Other players on offense making big plays, and there were a number. Alabama offense did put up the second high in the championship game. Alabama offense put up the second highest offensive day against Georgia. And ironically, it was behind the Alabama offense, the performance that he put up in the SEC championship game. About 150-yard difference. And imagine that. Alabama had Mechie and Jamison for almost the full game. If you think two players, two halves of football, Mechie went out at just about halftime of the first game. And so we had the two players for three of the four halves, if you will. And in the championship game, I think we had them for one of the four halves, for counting halves by player. So there were a number of players that stepped up. Cameron Latu certainly was one. He had five catches for 102. Surprisingly, he had a 61-yard. He caught the ball and just trucked it down the sideline. Not quite fast enough to get to the end zone. But on another play, he did have a touchdown, and he also had a drop in the end zone, which we've talked a little bit about as well. Ajay Hall, it was great to see him contribute. It was great to see him play. He had a couple of drops. We would have liked to have seen him sort of break onto the field much earlier in the season. So sort of all the rust would have been worn away, and his sort of comfort level with the quarterback would have been higher. But nonetheless, he took the long way around to the field. He had two catches for 52 yards. Like I said, a couple of concentration drops. He reminds me, and it's maybe a couple of different factors. I think the number a little bit, but he reminds me of Ardarius Stewart a little bit. Ajay's got a ways to go to be an Ardarius Stewart. But when he runs, it seems like it's all knees and elbows. And so it'll be interesting to see when he spends more time with the sort of the speed coaches, if he doesn't straighten up his run and get more of his momentum going, sort of going east and north and south as opposed to east and west. He's a lot of knees and elbows when he runs, but he looks like he's going to be a pretty good athlete for Alabama. And he did communicate that he's coming back, so that's certainly good to see. Ja'Cory Brooks, another youngster at the wide receiver position, again another couple of drops. Matt Wyatt picked on actually all three of these guys, but they made some nice plays for us. Brooks had six catches for 47, and look forward to all three of those guys coming back and blossoming into better players as time passes. Jaleel Billingsley, he has left the team, and he is going to resurface in Texas. But one of the things, and I want to credit Jordan on the Zoom call for bringing this up, but going back and watching it a little bit, it was certainly a play that brought out the emotion of Bill O'Brien on the side and in sort of the coach's box. You could see it on TV. You couldn't hear him, but you could see it on TV. And I did potentially a pretty good impersonation of Bill O'Brien on a play, Jaleel Billingsley. Jaleel Billingsley, it looks like a first down play. He cuts off the wrong foot, gets his defender's in good position, but Jaleel uses poor technique, cuts off the wrong foot, gets tangled up, and then falls in what would have been the right play call. He would have been open, would have been a catch, and it would have been a first down, helping Alabama move the chains. I do think at that point, it may have been that specific moment. Of course, when I acted it out, I took the liberty, but it may have been in that moment where the coaching staff, especially O'Brien, said, "I can't count on this guy. I cannot count on this guy. He cannot even cut off the right foot to make a play, a critical play in a ball game. I can't put him out there. I can't trust that he's going to make a play for us later." Now, literally, Billingsley did continue to play. He was targeted a couple more times, but he did net out with an empty stat sheet. And so that's sort of an interesting thing there. Go listen to the Zoom call, right? We had a little bit of fun with it, but a lot of really good conversation there as well. But it did look like Billingsley, it did look like the coaching staff sort of gave up on Billingsley there, because he proved himself yet again not to be prepared, not to be concentrating, and just not dependable. And I hate to say that about a guy, but there was a play there where that seemed to really crystallize. Like I said, we had some fun with that. Offensive line in general kind of was what it was all season, just not good enough in the end. And we had some misses there at the right tackle position. which sort of got in Bryce's face, made some passes more challenging than they should have been, certainly contributed to some lost yardage as well. Let's flip the field to defense. I thought the Alabama defense played very well just until it ran out of gas. They held Georgia to 4 of 12 on third down conversions. It's a pretty good percentage there. Will Anderson was a disruptive force. Again, his contribution outweighed his stat production, his stat line. And you could say that, and we have, about, you know, nearly almost the entire season. He should almost, other players that put up big numbers should almost have to pay a Will Anderson tax on their stat line. That they should, that some of their stats should accrue to Will Anderson. That's how disruptive Will Anderson is. He netted himself four tackles, one pass deflection, and he was really leading the charge. There's not a numeric to put on this. You can't quantify it. But when it looks like Stetson Bennett was rattled and we're a play away from just shaking his confidence and him throwing a pick six and just and really sort of breaking the game open that way, it looked like that was going to happen. The commentators, Herbstreit even said something not quite all the way to that effect, but he certainly suggested that Stetson's looking rattled here. Will Anderson was the name and face on that. Other players, though, were putting up stat lines. Christian Harris, again, really owes a tax to Will Anderson. He had seven tackles, three sacks, four TFLs. Dallas Turner lining up opposite of Will Anderson. He had four tackles, two sacks. So the offensive or the defensive front, I thought, was very physical. I thought Phil Mathis played a really good game. He went out late with a shoulder and haven't really seen or heard a lot about that. Obviously, if we had played this next week, they'd have more of a report on that. But looks like he's going to be okay. Maybe it was just a stinger. Just a really love some Phil Mathis, and hopefully he is able to get back, train for the draft, and do well in that regard. I want to talk about the cornerbacks. Alabama started two new cornerbacks. Kari Jackson making – he's a JUCO transfer. He had two tackles. He made his first start, and then opposite him, Kool-Aid McKinstry had four tackles. Kool-Aid's made a couple of starts. But if we go back, and we've talked about this, when you look at the beginning of the season, Jalen Amore Davis, Josh Job, Marcus Banks, Alabama played the national title game with their – to be their third and fourth or fourth and fifth cornerback relative to the start of the season. And so that's an impressive thing to be able to do that and still, in a general way, hold up well. There was a moment, it didn't last long, but there was a moment where I thought Kari Jackson may have the strangest play of the game that we would be likely to see. He was beat. His technique was a little off. He was beat, and he just tackled the receiver on what would have been a touchdown. And you think, man, if the defense, you know, can force a punt here, and Alabama can go back to score, and if the game sort of goes that way, then you could point back to that pass interference being a pivotal point in the game. And normally negative, but here it could have been very, very positive. It turned out Georgia had nothing to do with that. A couple of plays later, they actually beat Kyrie on a long touchdown pass. So sort of washed itself out. There was a funny moment at watching it, though, where I thought, boy, I'm ready to declare that the play of the game. But it didn't play out. I do look forward to those guys sort of growing and maturing. And I think we're going to have great competition at the cornerback position. Those two fellas with Eli Ricks coming in. We're going to have three really good corners and some hardy competition there for the top two. A lot of other defensive backs there as well. Brian Branch, I think, had the most – is sound worse than I mean it, but go back and watch. I think Brian Branch had the most lackadaisical fumble recovery that you could ever imagine. And the reason being is he did not realize that he was recovering a fumble at the moment that he recovered a fumble. There was a look like – was Stetson throwing the ball on the ground? Was it a fumble? The ball bounced up and just sort of found its way into Brian Branch's path as he was running out of bounds. And he just got it as his foot was in bounds. And so it was very, very close. But I think the footage was right. I also think the footage was right that it was a fumble and not an incomplete pass or not an attempted pass. Alabama had a pass that was it was a pass and had a sort of a touchdown called back for Georgia. This one was, I think, clearly a fumble. When Stetson's bringing his arm back, the ball starts to roll out. And so as his hand's coming forward, and his hand is coming forward, it just doesn't have the ball with it. And so go back when you were 2 and 3 and 4 years old and your dad was teaching, your mom was teaching how to throw a ball. You got to take the ball with you when you move your hand. And Stetson was not. So that was clearly a fumble. And then Brian Branch there was sort of the lackadaisical fumble recovery. Again, who knew that that was a fumble recovery? Even when the officials called it recovered by, how did that happen? Who the hell recovered it? Because we didn't see anyone recover it. And the way that it happened, the way that the ball was batted and bounced out, again, interesting play. There was a thought. There was, again, sort of these moments in time as you're watching a game. There was a moment in time where, of course, the Georgia fans are booing, as you would expect. Alabama fans would have booed as well. But there was a moment in time I thought, if Alabama wins on this sequence, if Alabama wins and it's sort of attributed back to this sequence, if Alabama can punch this into a touchdown, they were not able to, but punch this in for a touchdown, and then the defense continue to do what it's doing, Alabama wins the game, Georgia fans will line up at the bridge to jump off. And it turns out that those were some of the demons that Georgia exercised to overcome to win the game. So, damn it, I hate that they won, but kudos for them for their perseverance there. Let's talk special teams a little bit. Not a whole lot to say. Some good and some bad, like we've seen all season. Wirral Reichert was 4 of 5 on field goals. His one miss was blocked, so that's bad. And James Burnup, he had 4 punts, a net of 148, an average of just over 37. He had a long of 43, and he had 2 inside the 20. And if you juxtapose that to Jake Camarda, the Georgia punter, he had a net of he had 5 punts as opposed to 4, but he had a net of 223. And so that's a pretty big differential, 60, 70, 75 yards. On one punt. He averaged, Camarda did, 44 yards, had a long of 52. He also had 2 in the 20, 2 inside the 20. So, you know, the 2 in the 20 is not an excuse for the low average. Alabama needs some help at the punter position. Whether Burnup sort of matures into that this offseason, we'll see. If we need to go back to the portal, if we need to figure out Jake Martin, but I think Alabama needs to not lose field position. There was a stretch in the game where the teams traded punts, and Alabama kept going backwards. Georgia kept going forwards. Alabama kept going backwards. And it's all just because of the exchange, the lost yard exchange on the punts. You want a net, right? It's like a currency exchange. You don't want to lose money on the currency exchange. That's an arbitrage for the bank. Well, here, Georgia had an arbitrage in the exchange, the punt exchange between the two players. You can't do that. You can't do that. What's next? All right. We're going to take this a couple of different directions. The first thing we're going to do, you know, normally we say what's next. We transition from the game we just talked about, and we start thinking about who we're going to play next, right? That's sort of the nature of this segment. Well, we don't have an opponent. There is no next. This season is over. The 2021 season is over. Now, there's a lot of sort of next in terms of topics, and we'll talk about that. But let's take an exhale. We've talked about this a couple times on the as the season sort of unfolded, and we talked about this being a flawed team and such. Let's exhale. Let's take a moment and let's pause. And not just a moment, but let's take some time and let's celebrate this team. I honestly believe that this is Saban's best coaching job. Saban talks about the process, not necessarily the outcome. And so to say, well, this is coach's, you know, best job, or this is his best sort of season, yet it didn't result in a championship. That's playing the results. That's not playing the process. Look at where this team started, replacing so many players, so many star players, replacing so many coaches, star coaches, new quarterback, new linemen, new wide receivers, new running back. I think I saw where three of the six finalists for NFL Rookie of the Year are Alabama players. And those players all had to be replaced amongst so many more that had to be replaced. This team started so much behind where normal Alabama teams start. And so this team made up a lot more ground over the course of the season than what you might expect an Alabama team to have to make up. Of course, they were the preseason number one. I'm not talking about that, but just the number of positions and the production that had to be replaced from the prior season. This team had a greater sort of deficit to overcome, and they did. And they fell just short of winning the national title amongst all of that setbacks. All of the ankle weights that this team carried with it, a line that never really seemed to mature into its own, except, you know, save for maybe one or two games, a position where, for my money, Alabama was very much outmatched or outmanned for most of the season. Almost a roster of wide receivers that everyone had a turn at dropping passes. Even the stars, the Mechie and the Jamo and the Latu and the Slade Bolden, sure hand Slade, everyone had a drop. And so many other wide receivers as well. This team overcame all of that and was really in the title game, which, again, a little bit of a surprise, but was so close to winning. I know the final margin, but with the lead, 10 minutes left in the game, that's pretty compelling. That's pretty close. There's a lot of teams that would trade positions with Alabama in that regard. Now this team that's returning so many players has a taste for blood. And so Saban, don't let a loss beat you twice, or don't lose the lesson from a loss. This team, I think, is going to come out from this experience. The 2022 team will. So let's celebrate this team for all that they overcame, the uniqueness, the flawed, all of those things, but the stars that emerged. This was the emergence of Will Anderson. This was the emergence of Jameson. This was the emergence of Brian Robinson after waiting so long. Let's just take a moment and celebrate that for those guys. Now, in terms of next topics, you know, this team's going to go through a lot, and we're going to talk about some of it on the podcast, just not today. We're going to talk about the roster turnover, the players going to the NFL, the players that are graduating, transfers in and out. We're going to talk about the new recruits that are going to come in. And where we sit recording this, there's still sort of the secondary signing day. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Transfers in or transfers out, there's sort of a runway for that. I don't think J-Mo and Henry Toa, I don't think they committed to Alabama, signed with Alabama until late spring and summer. And so we're still talking January here. So there's a lot that can still happen in the portal. Players that haven't even announced yet, haven't even decided that they're going to transfer, Alabama may still get players from those teams. The coaching turnover, we know that Jay Valea is, hopefully I'm saying his name right, is going to Oklahoma. It's a little bit of a progressive step up from him. I predicted that he was going to hang around at Alabama for a little bit. I was not right, but we'll see. So we know that Alabama's bringing in at least one coach. We think there's speculation that there may be others. So there's coaching turnover still to deal with. And we're going to cover a lot of that in the offseason. In terms of the podcast, we're going to have more content this offseason. We're already working on one interview. We'll be hopefully doing others. We'll have more A-Day content than, you know, maybe what we have typically done. And we'll have more sort of roster turnover. And then we'll get into our preseason like we do, and we'll have some good content there as well. We have two very – I'm going to limit how I say this. I'm going to limit how I sell this, but I'm going to direct you to where you can find out more information. There are two incredibly special opportunities emerging on the Zoom team. you know, think about almost concentric circles. We've got the mass audience, we've got a support team, and we appreciate every one of you. And then we've got even a subset of that that have joined and participated on the Zoom calls. And sort of organically, three or four things have emerged from the Zoom call. An email list and a text group and a chat list has sort of organically sort of blossomed from the Zoom call. And we've got a couple of additional things that are going to manifest this off season and into next season coming from the Zoom call. And it's probably not fair for me to pitch and promote it here, because that's sort of an organic offshoot from the Zoom call. But what I tell you to do, it's worth the $2 trial to go listen to the last Zoom call where we really talk about some of that. And if that's something that's interest that is of interest to you, then sign up as a full-fledged member and start participating in the Zoom calls, and you'll have an opportunity to participate in those items as well. So that is an invitation, but that's like an invitation. It's an invitation by invitation. I'm inviting you to go check it out, plug into that group, and then and in that group, I'm sure we'll welcome you into those opportunities. But it's not something I feel like I can just pitch here, because I'm not the originator of some of this stuff. The Zoom call is. It truly is. It's like the T1000 or the T2000. It's like Skynet going active. The Zoom call has gone active. And so you need to be on the Zoom calls to participate in that Skynet going active. So with that, I'm going to say that I appreciate every one of you for downloading, for listening, for supporting us. This has been an exciting season, not only for Alabama football, not only for the Crimson Tide, but certainly for the podcast team and the things that we've done and the things that you've allowed us to share with you. We so greatly appreciate that. Words can't really say it. So we do so greatly appreciate it. And we look forward to doing more, more this offseason, more interaction, more engagement, more Zoom calls, more stuff next season, more interviews. And what we'd like for you to do is, if you're enjoying these, hey, go out to your podcast downloader and leave us a review. Leave us a 5-star, leave us a review. That helps people find us. If you have questions or topics that you would want us to engage with and spend time with, and we've gotten a number of topics over the years from listeners just like you, drop us an email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. Go to the website, alabamafootballpodcast.com. There's a contact page. There's actually a lot of pretty good content there, I think, but there's a contact page where it'll drop you in our email as well. We are on the Twitter machine and Facebook as well, and so you can look us up and follow us and track us there as well. So we look forward to engaging with more of you this offseason, and we look forward to getting some additional content out, tracking the roster turnover, all sorts of good stuff. So with that, this just in, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide, my friends. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.